Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host for the evening. It's a beautiful Wednesday, October 20th. Boy, where did the time go? I want to welcome all our callers listening online, those who may come by later on after we've been posted, and those that are calling in. I hope wherever you are, it has been a beautiful day, and it's time to relax, and we take our virtual trip to the island of Jamaica. We occupy our favorite chair in the backyard, on the beach, on the deck, or wherever you can relax and chill. And as the islanders say, no problem, man. So this evening, I want you to forget all of the day's stress or problems or challenges and just pretend you are on the No Problem Island of Jamaica, and we're going to relax and lavish. This evening's topic I found very interesting because I never knew, I know that we're all over the world, but I had no idea there was this wonderful, marvelous story that was waiting to come alive. Of course, because of our great historians that also love Jamaica, and they're doing such a fabulous job, tonight I would like to recognize Dr. Joy Lumsden for her work in bringing the story, at least to my attention, and for our listeners online or who may come by later on. Dr. Joy Lumsden is a resident of Jamaica. I suppose she's a citizen now, retired. She taught at the university, and there's quite a lot of information, so just Google her name. So I want to give a shout out to her and thank her for her dedication to the island. So I want to start with Dr. Lumsden's page. It's Joy Jam. If you Google Dr. Joy Lumsden, you will get information on our pages. And we've used her quite a lot in our backyard lavish. So this evening, I'm going to read some of her documentation on this marvelous young man who is not with us anymore, but left his mark. And I always encourage the seniors that are all over the diaspora to really get involved in making some information, documenting some information about their lives because, you know, no matter what we say, everybody's life is important. But we're always sort of basking with pride when we find someone that's from our country who has really achieve something, whether it's being strong during and a very difficult period, or stepping up to the plate to do something special. And just as they did in the past, they're doing now all over the world. But since I'm an old lady, I tend to go back and search for things that I never knew before. So I hope you'll enjoy this evening's story. And there's a book that's out that was penned by this gentleman. So let's start with Dr. Lumsden's page. He said, I started this site by putting together information obtained via the internet, but then I bought a copy of Robinson's significant book, Black on Red. That's the title of the book. So I was able to confirm and expand the information I had put on the site. The book is a great read, and I thoroughly recommend it. It is very valuable to have an account of the experiences of an African-American of Caribbean origin in the Soviet Union. Apart from the picture of the soul-destroying stresses of living under a totalitarianism-ridden regime, the commentaries on the deep-rooted nature of racism towards all non-Russians is most enlightening, especially in view of the reports of increasing numbers of violent race hate crimes coming out of Russia at the present time. And this article was written by Dr. Lumsden in November of 2009. So it's quite recent because we're just in 2010. So the name of this evening's story is about Robert N. Robertson. Now, he was born in Kingston, Jamaica in 1906, which I'm sure a lot of us in the diaspora have parents and relatives that were born during that period. I remember my mother was born in 1912, so, you know, it was sort of in just shortly before her time. Now, he was taken first to Cuba, and then in 1923 went to the USA, where he worked at the Ford Motor Company in Detroit. In 1930, he took up an offer to work in the USSR, where he lived until 1974. He had then been trying for nearly 30 years to get permission to leave Russia and return to the West. So far, the earliest documentation I have found of Robert Robinson is the record of his entry into the USA from Cuba in 1923. Now, I noticed on this article that his name was spelled differently. At the beginning, it's Robertson, and then his entry in the United States, his name was spelled Robinson. So I don't know if it's a typographical error or he was registered in Jamaica as Robertson, and then when he entered from Cuba, he was Robinson, which is a different spelling. And incidentally, she has pictures of him, quite a handsome young man. Now, these columns identify him as a mechanical machinist and black African. It gives his mother as Octavia Robinson, which is spelled Robinson, then living in Santa Diego. However, his age is given as 22, which would make his date of birth 1901, not 1906, as it is usually given. But this may only have meant he wanted to appear older than his actual 17 years. Another entry on the other page of the record gives his height as 5 feet 7 inches and his place of birth as Kingston, Jamaica. So she clearly established that he was born in Jamaica. Now, I'm not surprised that possibly he was trying to be older than he was at the time, because he wanted to get a job. This was, 19-whatever, when knowing people born in the Caribbean, they always tease on television before when they had the sitcoms. They were always teasing the Jamaicans of having so many jobs. So, we have been trying to get into the workplace and work our way up for generations. So let's get back to the article, and I want to welcome the listeners on the board and to remind them that this is elaborate. So during my reading of the article and telling the story, I usually I call them sidebars. I, put my little 2 cents in and talk perhaps about what the story means to me or what my thoughts are on it. And I would love to have your thoughts on the story too as we go along, or your comments. So please feel free to hit 1 on your telephone. That will indicate to me that you'd like to join the Labrish. So for the people online, you'll have to call in if you want to join the Labrish. So call us on board, feel free. So I am back to Dr. Joy Lumsden's article. Now, by 1930, Robinson, and she's now spelling his name R-O-B-I-N-S-O-N, because that's how he entered the United States. So he was working at the Ford plant in Dearborn, Michigan. Now, Robert Robinson was apparently trained in Cuba to operate machine tools, and after he moved to the United States in the 1920s, he became one of the few black machinists working at Ford's River Road plant at Dearborn, just outside Detroit. In April of 1930, a Russian delegation visited the plant. The Russians had great respect for Ford's production methods and were hoping to tap into American expertise to promote Russia's industrial development. Robinson, the only black man in the 700-man department, was offered a contract for a year to work and teach his skills in the Soviet Union at the Stalingrad tractor factory. He was then earning $140 a month at the plant, and was offered $259 a month, rent-free living quarters, a maid, 30 days paid vacation a year, a car, free passage to and from Russia, and they would deposit $150 out of each month's paycheck in an American bank. I can say that was quite a carrot for a young man at the time. So we established that he was apparently trained in Cuba to be a specialist on this tool machine. But I can just imagine him, just picture in those days, the only black person in a 700 man, there were only men working there at the time, factory. Wow. Okay, during the first year in Stalingrad, Robinson became an international celebrity. Although there was little overt friction between American and Russian workers, one of the white American workers objected to association with black American workers. Two white Americans set on Robinson and tried to throw him out of the mess hall. As a result of this incident, he was viewed as a hero by his fellow workers. The authorities and the press, though, he was very uncomfortable with that title, there was a big demonstration at the factory, and both Russian and American workers denounced racism and called for punishment of the offenders. Now, the two Americans were put on trial before a judge, and one of them ended up being deported. Robinson collaborated with the authorities with some reluctance, fearing being shipped back to America. He continued to be considered a hero, and the authorities continued to use him to exemplify the Soviet attitude towards racism. Now, I suppose, you know, it was politically correct at the time for the Russians to put the Americans to shame, of course. So they used the incident to really talk it up at the time. Now, at the end of his first year in Russia, Robinson's renewed his contract. I suppose he was quite happy with the wage and the fact that they made him a hero. So the Soviet authorities were eager to retain the Americans and integrate them further into the Soviet system. After his second year, he intended to return to the USA, but was persuaded to sign a year's contract with the first state ball bearing plant. Before starting that contract, he took a vacation with his mother and noted the contribution of the continuation of the Depression. This was during the years of the Depression here in the United States. He was, however, also concerned at something that was happening in Russia. Fellow workers were suddenly leaving the factory without any warning or explanation. The era of the Great Purge was starting. So I'll take a break now and ask if any, first of all, I'd like to know if any of the listeners on the board heard about this story before, because I certainly didn't know. I didn't even know about that a black man of of Jamaican birth was in Russia in such a, being, you know, labeled a hero and actually was quite popular among his coworkers. So do I have any hands on the board? Anybody want to chime into this discussion? Please let me know. So I'll go back and read then. I see I have no hands. But I really hope that you all are finding this as interesting as I did when I discovered it. And I want to take this time to remind the listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock. The whole objective of this show is to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And my passion really is to bring to life some positive stories about the past and at the same time relate them to the present, as we know that we're all humans, regardless of where we're from or where we live now. You know, the human condition and the human psyche is not all that different. We might have different customs, different colors, different religions, different ways of life, but somehow there's so much of the same in behavior in humans just over time and all over the world. So I would like to have some conversation about the impact of this. I remember last week when we did, or some time ago when we did something, and I found out at the time I wasn't quite aware that news was repressed, you know, even in the so-called free world long ago. Because right now, and when I was growing up, we would think of the communist countries that would be, or, you know, countries that are ruled by dictators, that where information about anything would be not free. you know, you're not free to express, which tells us how very fortunate we are to have, for me, to have grown up in a country where we did not really have that, and to be living in a country where we have so much freedom. So I can just imagine a black person living among all, so different, you know, at the time, we're talking about during the days of the purge in Russia, the fear from one thing or the other, then you know how brave and strong an individual has to be to really keep their composure, concentrate on what they're doing, keep themselves safe and sane. So I that's what I am reading into this man's life as I sort of think about what life might have been like in a place like that at a time like that. I mean, it was bad enough here and all over the world, I suppose, during the Depression when things were not, you know, that cool. We're not quite that bad now, but I can imagine what life was like then. Okay, let's go back to the article. I don't see any hands on the board. I guess I'll just have to keep reading and talking to myself. But remember, this is a library, so all you callers on the board, put your hand up. Let me know that you're listening, or let me know that you are there. So back to Dr. Lumsden's article. On the December 10th, 1934, Robinson, who had put forward 50 proposals to rationalize tool production in the ball bearing plant, went to a factory meeting which had to elect a representative to the Moscow Soviet. Speeches were made in support of various nominees, and then a man stood up and nominated Robinson. The crowd roared with enthusiasm, and he was elected to a four-year term on the council. Can you imagine that? He's the only black man there. 699 white men roaring to elect this one black man to a four-year term on the Soviet Council. Unbelievable. Now, the completely astounded Robinson said shortly afterwards, "I am not a member of the Communist Party. I am not interested in politics. In fact, I have no idea what my duties will be as a delegate in the Moscow Soviet." Can you imagine that? This election had serious consequences. It opened him to accusations of being a communist, and the U.S. State Department required him to return to America. Talk about opening up a can of worms. Now, here's this poor man minding his own business, and the crowd decide that he must be elective. Unbelievable. I can't even picture that. So let's get back to the article. Robinson wanted to complete his contract in spite of the increasing incidence of disappearances and to attend courses at the Moscow Evening Institute of Mechanical Engineering, where he had recently been accepted. He therefore made arrangement with the authorities to receive a sort of emergency Soviet citizenship while still being considered a U.S. citizen. Very complicated. In effect, though he gave up his U.S. citizenship, this all happened at a most inauspicious time, the assassination of Kerovv, K-R-O-V, however you say that, an important Soviet leader. That had unleashed the full fury of Stalin's purge of his perceived enemies. One who was purged was Lovett Fort Whiteman, a prominent black American communist who had also gone to live in Russia in 1930. The favored status of foreign workers rapidly melted away. By 1937, Robinson found himself the only black American worker still at liberty. As he later said, he asked himself, what kind of hell I had gotten into. Now, he recounted how during those years he hardly dared to undress and go to sleep at night as he waited for the dreaded knock on the door, which he assumed would surely come. Isn't that something? Now, the onset of war with Germany changed circumstances radically. The purges ended, though Robinson observed that he and a Hungarian were by then the only surviving foreign workers, the rest having gone to Gulag. The reign then encouraged patronism over party loyalty, and the people flocked to the churches seeking God's forgiveness and aid. Conditions in Russia became desperate, and Robinson's records being virtually saved from starvation by his woman doctor, who invited him to dinner with her family every Sunday. Oh my goodness. Lots of hardship. As soon as the war ended, Robinson applied for permission to visit his mother, who was ill. This permission was refused, and every year from 1946 to 1973, he renewed his application for permission to travel out of the USSR. From the start, there had been problems in sending money back to his mother. He felt that the Soviet authorities would never let him go because he knew too much about the real conditions in the country. Well, I found that to be really something else. Now I'm going to take a break again, and I'm going to ask the listeners on the board to join in the labyrinth. So someone, please raise your hand and let me know what you think of the article so far. I don't know if I'm the only old lady that's really not exposed, but I never heard of this story before I stumbled on it in going over Dr. Lumsden's information on the net. Do I have any hands? I see 973, I see 718, I see 404, I see 312. Is anybody going to talk to me this evening? I see 516 just coming on board. Welcome. No, I see a raised hand, and I'm going to open up the mic because I have to take a breath here. I'm going to open up the mic to 718-379, and in a minute, good evening. This is Margaret in the backyard having a great labyrinth. Who do I have?
This is Lay in the Bronx, the home of the world champion New York Yankees.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Mr. Yankee fan. Welcome to the backyard.
Yeah.
Can you help me out here? Did you hear about the story before, or were you familiar with this?
No, never heard of him, and this was certainly an odd time to be in the Soviet Union. I mean, a lot of people haven't survived even being there, let alone somebody who was active and, was offered a position in the Soviet Union.
Isn't that something? But, I mean, he apparently was good at what he did, I gathered from the...
Well, that's probably why they wanted to keep him and give him all these quote-unquote perks
Right.
But he was making pretty good money, being
one of 700 people in a factory?
Yeah. It brings to mind this singer, Paul Robeson, in a sense, that, you know, because of the culture in America at the time, he chose to go to Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And became very famous as a
singer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this guy, in his own way, certainly became famous in a factory with, you know, so many people that
didn't look like him,
so to speak.
But what I thought was quite interesting that. Apparently, you know, there's not a lot of details, but apparently they were all men working in this factory. They were not all Americans. I'm sure there were Russians, too. They had this group of Americans, of which he was one and the only black one. But it's ironic that it's Americans who tried to throw him out of the mess hall in Russia.
Well, it's ironic, but this is typical behavior of Americans.
Even though they weren't in their own country, but and the people of that country, if they were even, you know, thinking it, they weren't certainly not displaying it at the time.
Because on totally a different subject, now that you brought it up, is own Americans were, you know, acting this way. Even in Panama during the war, the Americans wanted to bring their southern way of life to people on the bases in Panama. So,
right.
You know, it's
so
not
most
unusual.
Most of them were Panamanians or from the other islands.
Well, they had an American base there, and they wanted to operate the base as if it was a southern place, you know,
right,
location.
Right.
So it's not unusual for them to act this way, no matter where they are. But getting back to the fella, I mean. It takes a Jamaican to hold his head up wherever and even excel at what he's doing, because he had to be good to be able to compete in that arena and even to be offered the leadership role.
Right. Well, at least it shows that his co-workers respected him in terms of that.
Yes.
And I noticed that he wanted to pursue the studies at this place where he could, you know, further educate himself with what he specialized in.
Uh-huh.
So it just goes to show that, you know, nowadays when people have challenges and they tend to want to give up or blame somebody else or, you know, don't follow through or don't stand up, or the political buzzword now is man up or whatever. But you look back in time and you see these citizens of the world, you know, and now we're just celebrating the ones that were born in Jamaica, but I'm sure there's similar stories all over the world. And I hope that the young folks, you know, will really use these stories and this information to really get centered as to the possibilities they have, because things have changed so much, and having access to especially education has become a lot easier, I think, you know, with people being able to educate themselves online and things like that. Because look at me, I mean, I am almost housebound, But because of the internet, I can find all this marvelous information. Just like Dr. Lumsden said, you know, she does most of her research on the internet. I can tell you it can be very time-consuming to piece a story together and to, you know, verify it, make sure that you have as much of the real facts as you possibly can. But at least you can get it. You know, years ago, this kind of research could not be done that easily. So for the older folks, I want to always encourage them to embrace it, you know, and enjoy it and participate in it. So, Mr. Lay, I know that you're quite up. You're quite a computer man, beside being a Yankees man. So did you find anything else extra on Mr. Robinson? I have a couple more things I'm going to read about him.
Oh, this time you hit me for a six because I could not find anything about him.
Really?
At least.
Oh, well, you know, thanks to Dr. Lumsden, we have, you know, quite a bit of story. And I have read a couple of his reviews. I didn't have time to read the book. I would suggest that people who really want to have a little insight of what life might have been like during those years in Russia as a black person, I would recommend the book. It's Black on Red.
Where did you find the information? Under what name? Robinson?
Black on Red. That's the name of the title. And it's he penned it. Robert Robinson.
Yeah, Robinson is where you found the information.
Right, Robinson, yes. And if you go to Dr. Joy Lumsden's pages, you know, she has several articles. We have featured quite a few of them on the Backyard before, and I continue to use a lot of her material.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if she's currently doing anything. I wish she would join us. I send her the promos each week, and I'm hoping that one week she'll surprise us and Skype in or let us know that she's well and still researching or something. But I would also like to, if anyone that comes by later on or is on the board right now that has any information or they're familiar with this particular book, or I understand from reading that his book is used a lot in, you know, culture about Russia and the black experience and things like that. But let me go back. Beg your pardon?
What's the name of the book?
Black on Red.
Okay.
And on her website, she has a picture of the book cover. I'm going to try to get it on Backyard Labrish, too. And it can be purchased. It's sort of pricey. The book is $73, I think, on Amazon. But there are used copies that are available for a lot less. And while I hope to be able to read the book, you know, at some time. Right now, I'm trying to put my material together for the shows each week. And at this time, I would like to ask any of our fans that would like something discussed in the backyard to just send me a note. You can send me a note if you are online at the Blog Talk site. There, I think you can send an email from there. Excuse me. Or if you go to backyardlabrish.com. You can definitely send us some email telling us what you like, what you don't like, what you'd like to add, what you prefer. We just want this to be a show that entertains you, enlightens you, and we're always going to be talking about something that we want to preserve. And hopefully the fans are just as intrigued in discovering all this new information as I am, because I know it's keeping me and my brain active and keeping me young. So, Lay, thanks for your comments, and I'm going to leave the mic open. So feel free to chime in, as we say, at any time. So let me go back to what Dr. Lumsden has on her site for him. Through the years, this part of the article is titled "Through the Years." Robinson just worked hard and tried to keep out of trouble with the KGB. Now, this is 1945 to 1973. His Christian faith helped him through as he read his Bible and thought of God every day. He went to church each Sunday across the road from the KGB's headquarters. Now, partly because of his faith, which discouraged casual sexual relationship, he never responded to the interest in him shown by some Russian women. That was interesting. He also feared that the women may be agents of the KGB, trying to entrap him. In general, the lack of personal freedom in the Soviet system made deep and lasting relationships virtually impossible. Isn't that something? There were positive aspects to life in Russia. He reached heights in his profession as a mechanical engineer, which would have been almost impossible for a black American at home at that time. He received medals and bonuses for his engineering design work. As one of the few black Americans in the country, he was called upon to advise producers of films and plays dealing with interracial relationships in the USA. But he felt that the authorities were only interested in stereotypes, which fitted in with their propaganda against the Americans. Obviously, he also had the opportunity to meet prominent black visitors to Russia, such as Paul Robeson and Langston Hughes. He tried unsuccessfully to get Robeson's help to return to the USA. He did not get on well. However, with the black American communists who were living in Russia, because of his lack of enthusiasm for the reign and its ideology, and his greatest interest in black pride, racial pride, and his greater interest in black racial pride. In other words, what I'm reading here, he was really not a political person. You know, he was really into his career and his religion, you know, which helped him through all of these things. But in the meantime, they were using him for political reasons, obviously. Now, in March of 1953, Stalin died and an era ended in Russia. The millions who had idolized him were in despair, and hundreds were trampled to death in a stampede at the badly organized funeral. As Robinson noted, this disaster was not reported either in the newspaper or on radio. It's not something. Do you remember hearing of that, Leigh? Where, you know, at the funeral, at Stalin's funeral, there was a stampede and a lot of people were trampled to death?
No, I don't remember that.
I wasn't familiar with that either, but apparently, as he said, you know, it wasn't reported in the newspaper or on the radio because in those days everything was hush-hush. 2 years after Stalin's death, Robinson's hope of leaving the USSR were raised when the remarkable black American journalist William Worthy, who was then the Soviet correspondent for CBS News and the Baltimore Afro-American, arranged for him to be allowed to go to Britain. Items in the Jamaica Daily Gleaner in July and August of 1955 suggested that what the British government intended was that Robinson should return to Kingston, where he was born. Letters and comments in the paper indicated that there was local resistance to the possibility of a communist agent being planted in the island. Isn't that something? Were you, or is anybody on the board familiar with that information? This was fairly recent, you know, 1955 wasn't all that long ago, was it?
No, but, you know, it probably would be hard for him to distance himself from being associated with the communist ideology anyway. I mean, you know, it wouldn't be easy for him to explain that he wasn't politically minded.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry?
Yeah, I understand. I see how that can happen. But you see how a person can be, call it, entrapped?
Yeah. Well, it was easy in those days, you know. They thought
right.
nothing of using you, and in his case, it would be a good propaganda tool.
Right, definitely. Okay. This is interesting. This is back to her article. Norman Manley's People's National Party had won the general election earlier in the year. Although the PNP was a left-wing party, it had only 3 years before gone through considerable upheaval in expelling prominent communist-leaning member of the party. Manley would certainly have rejected the idea of the return of Robinson, whose ideological position was totally unknown. They didn't know what side he really was. It seemed likely that Jamaican opposition was responsible for Robinson being unable to leave Russia in 1955. So Robinson's Russian exile continued. In 1957, he witnessed the Russians' excitement at the Soviet achievement in the launching of the first man-made satellite, the Sputnik. They beeped greetings to each other on the streets. In 1959, he met briefly the U.S. diplomat Bill Davis, who nearly two decades later was to engineer his return from exile. In 1961, he observed Robinson's final trip to Russia, the Bill Davis person, when he seemed to find himself in opposition of Khrushchev over treatment of the Jews. Robinson fell ill with his final illness soon afterwards. Poor man. In 1973, Robert Robinson finally got his break. See, you just have to be patient sometimes. Let me get to the next page so we can finish this up, because I found all of that information really so interesting and intriguing. Okay. In 1974, Robinson finally found a way to leave the USSR via a trip to Uganda and the backing of Amin. You remember when Amin was in? At some point, Robinson had met in Moscow a woman. Athis, sounds like a woman, Lubega, the Ugandan ambassador to the USSR. And in 1973, that person extended him an invitation to spend his annual holidays in Uganda in the following year. So in 1974, apparently the Soviet authorities found it expedient to allow the trip and finally gave Robinson the necessary travel documents. His long years under the reign made him suspect that the authorities would prevent him actually leaving. He hid the travel documents behind the wallpaper to thaw the KGB agent sent to retrieve them. In his book, there is a heart-stopping account of the last-minute bureaucratic obstacles which nearly put a stop to his longed-for escape. Now, in 1974, Robinson landed in Uganda and was welcomed by Amin with an offer of citizenship and a teaching position. He refused the citizenship but accepted the post. The Soviet authorities were informed that he would remain in Uganda to teach. So actually, he just went there for a vacation and then apparently got this post and stayed. Now, while teaching, this is where he met his wife. While teaching, he met and married, her last name is very American, Map. Her first name is spelled Zylpha, Zelpha Map. He apparently tried again to regain Jamaican citizenship, but believed that the old newspaper article from 1955 told against him. He was, however, able to obtain a U.S. green card, and then he and his wife left Uganda as the Amin regime disintegrated at the end of the 70s. With further assistance from Bill Davis, he once again became a U.S. citizen in December of 1986, at a time when the Russian industrial economy within which he had worked so long was about to reform, to be reformed by Governor Gorbachev.
Gorbachev.
How do you say that, Leigh?
Gorbachev.
Gorbachev, uh-huh. So he was reforming the industry at time. Now, in May 1988, his book, Black on Red, Recording His Russian Experiences, was written in collaboration with Jonathan Slevin, S-L-E-V-I-N, and it was published. So his book was actually published in 1988. He had hopes of writing more books and of revisiting Africa, but clearly still fearing the Soviets. He didn't want to revisit Russia. He and his book were frequently cited in books and videos on Russian and Black history topics. And in 1991, the BBC produced a documentary on his life entitled, I thought this was a very nice title, eh? It was called The Reluctant Comrade. Isn't that something? Well penned. After his death from cancer, a memorial service was held at Howard University in 1994. And Bill Davis, this is the same man who helped him escape, you know. And the man from Africa was meeting for the first time. And they were among those who eulogized the perfect gentleman from Jamaica and had extended their sympathies to his widow. And that is the end of the story. I thought that was so intriguing because, you know, he feared the KGB or the Russians even after he left.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable. And he really wanted to return to Jamaica.
Yeah. Well,
quite,
you know, it seems strange that the Jamaicans wouldn't let him in because,
well, they weren't sure if he was a Russian agent, what his ideas were, because apparently he was very silent. He didn't do a lot. It didn't say much about this position that he was voted in. He said he didn't even know what his duties were.
But it looks like the same time Jamaica was cozying up with Cuba. So what's the big deal?
Well, apparently they didn't know if he would be against the Soviets. You know, if you don't know where a person stand and you have a stand, it is hard to embrace them.
I guess
you know, what if when he came, he was anti-Soviet? It wouldn't work for the political party at that particular time, I am assuming.
But by this time, you see, the guy's character was not one, you know, an inflammatory fella. He kept quiet all the time.
He was more interested in pursuing his education and using what he could. Now,
yes,
there are a couple of lessons I learned from this. You know, with all that was happening, number one, he stayed focused. He wanted to escape. He wanted to be out of there. And at the same time, he knew he couldn't get out, so he wasn't sitting around moping. He was doing whatever job he had at the time to the best of his ability. That's what I gathered. Are you agreeing with me?
Yes.
Because he was busy trying to get in school. He was called upon to, even though he knew it was just for propaganda purposes, to, you know, help with plays and movies and things like that about, you know, black-white relationship, even though it was propaganda against the Americans. But he had to use what he had to use to his advantage at the time to stay safe and still focus and getting out of the damn place. Oops, didn't mean that. But, you know, I can see a lot of lessons in that from my perspective, because he was not necessarily buying into their story, but he had to do what he had to do. And I suppose since whatever was happening in Jamaica at the time, they weren't sure about him, they didn't want to take the chance of giving him back his citizenship. But I didn't know you could lose that. You can?
I don't know. That's a good point. I thought that once you're Jamaican, you're a Jamaican.
Well, apparently, remember when he got the political office, when he was voted in, he had to get a dual citizenship at the time. Well, he had been an American citizen. But I had the impression that once you were born in Jamaica, you were always a citizen of Jamaica. And I don't know if anybody on the board know anything about that, and I would really love to know. So,
well, the question is, when he became, did he become an American?
Yes, he became an American citizen.
When you become an American, for instance, when you're in the armed services, they offer you to, if you want to become an American citizen, you have to renounce your previous citizenship.
Oh, I thought you could have dual citizenship.
Well, you could, but the America doesn't recognize that.
Yeah,
so
but it wasn't America. That is Jamaica.
Yes, but I'm
saying...
Are you
saying that you're born Jamaican?
There were some complications, him being an American citizen.
From the American point of view. So here's my question. If you are born in Jamaica...
Right.
Can you lose your citizenship if you become a citizen of the United States or England or any place?
I don't think you can you can lose your citizenship. I think basically when you're a born Jamaican, you're still a Jamaican. All you need to do is reapply. If you don't have a Jamaican passport, you reapply for it.
Well, apparently it didn't work for him then, because they say he tried to go back to Jamaica.
Like, well, the authorities were stonewalling him.
Yeah. Well, that's what I found even more a little confusing, because I think you wouldn't have to apply for a citizenship if you were born in a country.
See, probably in from their point of view, the Jamaican leaders or whoever you want to call them, they were looking at him as a persona non grata, having been mixed up in whatever in Russia. I mean,
right.
that carried a heavy baggage.
Right, I guess so. So I suppose the answer is yes, it's possible.
Well, I don't think he was challenging his right to be to maintain his citizenship. They just wouldn't let him in.
Well, isn't that the same thing?
No. I mean, they can do what. In those days, it was not that hard to keep out a person who was. They viewed as suspicious, you know. They're viewing him as...
You were a born Jamaican.
Yeah.
I got you. Okay, well, I'm not very knowledgeable about political things, and, you know, that's neither here nor there. It was just interesting to note that.
I know people that claim citizenship to 3 and even 4 different countries.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's possible to still be a Jamaican as well as something else.
Right. But I didn't know that Jamaica could deny you once you were born there.
Yeah, they can do anything they want when it comes down to it.
Right, I got you. Well, I want to thank the listeners on the board. I hope you enjoyed this story. And we are always open to do something that you would like, as long as it celebrates, enlightens, and preserves the rich culture of Jamaica, land we love. And I see a hand up. So I'm going to open the mic to 516. Good evening. You've got Margaret in her easy chair in the backyard. Welcome to the Labrish. Who do I have?
Good evening, Margaret. This is Janine.
Hi, Janine. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm calling from Florida again.
Great.
On my cell. That's why it's coming up 516.
I got you.
I heard some of your what you had to say tonight, but I wasn't able to hear the whole show. But I just want you to know that I listened to some of it. So.
Oh, good. Well, thank you. And, you know, I want to tell any of the listeners that our shows, all of our shows, are archived, and they can be listened to at your convenience. Because if you go online using the link, if you are on my list, or if you just go to blogtalkradio.com, and search for Backyard Labrish, it will take you to the Backyard Labrish site. And all the shows that I've done for a little over 2 years are filed by the month, and you can listen to any show. You can search them and listen to any show. And if you want to share that show with anyone you think may be interested in that particular subject, all you have to do is copy and paste the URL, that is the address bar, and send it to them. Or better yet, you can ask them to join the Labrish by going to www.backyardlabrish.com and send us an email saying that they'd like to be added to the Backyard list. And I send out one promotion once a week to let you know what the show will be that for that particular week. I usually do not send any other mail. And we are here to do one thing and one thing only, and that is to encourage people in the diaspora to, I know that no matter what part of the world you're living, and Janine, no matter what city you are in the United States or in a foreign country, I know that all of us that were born and raised in Jamaica, even though we may not plan to go back to live, we always want to go visit, but yeah. We always think fondly of our island, right?
Right, at all times. Mm-hmm.
At all times. So, you know, we want to thank everybody for the support that they've given to Backyard Labrish. You know, I am trying to be entertaining. I know a lot of times people don't have time to do their own research, and it seems like they really appreciate hearing these stories, because the last time I looked collectively, since I've been doing it just a little over 2 years, we've had the shows downloaded over 20,000 times.
Wow.
I thank everyone for that support, and as usual, I'm asking you, if you know someone with a inspiring story or someone who just want to tell us something they remember or tell us something that was maybe different or they want to share or they want to leave information about, something they think should be preserved, I would be more than happy to have them as a guest and feature their story. So with that invitation, now, please tell your friends that's what the Labrish is all about. So they're
right.
Free to come and share.
Yeah.
And Janine, at this point, I want to remind our listeners that we interviewed your dear Aunt Gloria, who was 97 and could remember.
94?
Yeah. Oh, I'm making her older than she really is. At the time, she remembered her Irish background and moving with her parents to where, you know, the settlers then of Irish descent sort of stayed on the island then. And it was such an inspiring story.
Yes.
And now I understand she's not well. So do you want to give us
Well, ever since they gave her the overdose of the morphine, it has thrown her back tremendously. My aunt is still in a nursing home, you know. I can't
still in
say,
the nursing home.
She's still in a nursing home, and I don't even have a date or a time that I can say it looks as if she's going home. What
right,
they have
okay.
done
Thank
is
you.
To put my aunt back a lot with her health, which, as you know, when you interviewed her, she was okay.
Right,
know,
she
now,
was fine, had a wonderful memory. And it
yes.
just brings me to the point of pointing out how, you know, it's so important to preserve your memories in
yes.
a fashion like, you know, having it recorded. So
yes.
I know that segment that we did with her is online. All
yes.
of her relatives can go and listen to her wonderful voice and the stories that she shared with us about growing up in Jamaica,
yes.
at the area that she grew up. So
yes.
I want to use it almost as a commercial to invite people to do the same. So if you have a idea about a story that you'd like us to labrish about, feel free to let me know, and I'll be,
yes.
or if you know someone who would like to share their personal story, not necessarily they have to be totally personal, but their experience that they think is something that the rest of the world would like to know. Because people come by, not just Jamaicans, but people who are interested in culture, people who are interested in diversity, people who are interested in just finding out about people from other parts of the world. They come by and listen to the stories, too. It's not just Jamaicans. I understand that is coming by and listening to our Labrish.
Yes.
So with that
and,
said,
and
I want
what,
to call...
what they have to remember, too, is that from day to day, we really don't know what's going to happen, because just use Aunt Gloria as an example. You know,
right.
God forbid if anything happens to her, they can go back and hear her side of the story when she was growing up. They can also hear her voice, what it sounds like. And a lot of people don't take that into consideration, because it's good if they call in, because then, you know, they can always go back and hear stuff, you know. You
right.
When a person passes away, you remember the person, but after a while you don't remember the voice. And with something like this, you can go back and hear the person's voice, you know. So,
you know,
I'm just encouraging a lot of people to, you know, call in, say something, you know, because it means a lot, maybe not to you, but to the next generation or you know, other people that would like to hear what you sound like or what you had to say, you know.
Yes, because a lot of times we don't think that our opinions are important.
Right,
but you'd be surprised to know, you know, just telling how you feel or relating something that happened or responding to something can be very meaningful to a lot of people.
And I'm hoping
that I think that most of the listeners and the people who have contributed are mostly seniors. Or some of them not as quite as senior as I am. But, you know, the young folks will one day perhaps find the information very meaningful. So we can consider it leaving a legacy.
Yes.
And I want to thank my loyal listeners, Mr. Lay from the Bronx, home of the Yankees, and
Hi,
Ms. Janine visiting in Florida. And all the other callers on the board, 673-402-312, and the listeners online, that we are glad you're here, and thank you for your support, and we hope to see you next week, where this old lady is going to dig up some more information so that we can lavish, and in doing so, we will celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica all together now.
And we love.
Mr. Lay from the Bronx, where were you?
I was right here.
Well, you didn't say the land we love. Is that love waning?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, good night, all. And as I always say, make it A great week. Thank you for listening.
God bless you all.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Never saw the sun shining so bright. Never saw the rain go so bright. Noticing the day turn. think this the wrong way, Mr. President. I'm not a decorator. I just sing the occasional show tune. But this room, it's a little bland. It needs something to spice things up. I know. How about Tony Award winner Karen Oliver and company come out and sing The Fiery America from West Side Story? Talented, she pretty much wins a Tony Award every time she leaves her apartment. An incandescent actress, now an Emmy-nominated television star and one of the best voices in the American theater. Four-time Tony Award winner, Audra McDonald, singing Frank Lesser's Can't Stop Talking About Him.
I'm talking about him.
Everman. Please welcome the star of Memphis, this year's Tony Award for Best Musical, Chad Kimball.
What's that?